Hey gang, are you looking to make business cards and not quite sure where to go? And maybe you've gone to some online sites and ordered some cards and they turned out to be flimsy and funky and not exactly what you were looking for? Let me tell you about the one that I use. I use Vistaprint.com. Vistaprint allows you to make up to 500 full-color single-sided or double-sided business cards starting at $9.99. Simply go to Vistaprint.com, order your cards, and in the offer code, enter BC500. That's B as in boy, C500, and start passing out your cards to everyone. Vistaprint.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope that you guys all had a great weekend. I have a great show for you guys today. Samuel Chown, known musically as Shmoo, is my guest today. He was supposed to come on the show before the Pecan Street Festival, but we were not able to do it, and finally came by. We had a great conversation. Samuel Chown is a Canadian dude who plays shoegazer music. It's like shoegazer dream pop meets psychedelic glitch. You can find him at schmusix.com. That's S-H-M-U-S-I-X.com. Schmusix. Pick up his album, Shh. That's his latest album. Chroma Key from 2013. He's a fantastic dude, man. He went to Berkeley. He's got a record label that we didn't really get to talk too much about, but it's called GTZ Records. You can find it at gtzrecords.com. He's got Gloves International. Of course, his stuff, Shmoo, comes out on there. Stiletto Feels, UVH, and Slugbug. He's also in another project called Zorch. We have a great conversation. He's a great guy, really interesting guy, very smart. He started playing at a very young age, taught himself a lot of instruments, and now he's here. Moved from Canada, went to Berklee College of Music, and then came to Austin. Great conversation with the great Samuel Chown, otherwise known as Shmoo. Stick around for that. That's coming out in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. I did have an interesting weekend. As you heard on Friday, I was feeling sick, and I had a gig that night, Friday night, here in Austin with Skyrocket at Cedar Street. Made it through the gig. Ended up doing well. Took a long nap on Friday and got my voice back for the night. The next day, got up, wasn't feeling that great. Did a podcast here with Amy and the Hi-Fis. You will hear that on Friday. And then went to a rehearsal for a show I did on Sunday night for John Lennon's birthday. And then after that rehearsal, man, I felt crappy again, just came home. I didn't have a gig that night, so Saturday night I just laid low, you know, stayed in, slept. Sunday got up, took a couple of naps, and then went and did that John Lennon show. It was really fun, man. Darren Murphy from Skyrocket sang. He did a great job, as he always does. Gerf Morlick sang. Sila Misra sang. She was fantastic. William Harry's Graham, John D. Graham. Stephen Doster and the Number 9 Orchestra, of course, those guys, man, they really pull it together for those shows, and they do a great job with all the music. They get members of the symphony in to play harp and guitar. I mean, harp and violin, and they had a percussionist. And I did Dr. Robert from Rubber Soul, which is one of my favorite songs that they wrote about their drug dealer, and I did Revolution. So yeah, I had a great time, and then afterwards, I got together with Miles Zuniga, who was one of the singers there that night. It was a great show at Threadgill's here in Austin, and we were like, hey, let's go grab some dinner. So we went and had a late-night dinner over at Justine's French Restaurant. We had a couple of steaks and some escargot, like gentlemen, and shot the shit. It was great catching up with him, ran into some friends, saw a lot of dudes there. Ricky Ray Jackson was there. Yeah, anyway, great time. Looking forward to a great week. Friday, if you live in San Antonio, Skyrocket will be playing at Sam's Burger Joint. It's also my birthday that day, so that's going to be weird. Getting older. Just getting older. That's how it works, right? All right. I want to remind you that we do not do any advertising for this show. And it is by word of mouth and by word of social media. So if you like this show and you want to help us spread the word, share it. Share it on Facebook, share it on Twitter, share it on Instagram, share it on Pinterest, wherever it is that you like to share stuff the most. You know, if you like a show, share it, tag us in it. How Did I Get Here? You can like our Facebook page. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy. And hey, enjoy my conversation with the extremely talented Samuel Chown, also known as Shmoo. Pick up his music. His latest album, Shh, is available now. GTZ Records. Go to schmusix.com, S-H-M-U-S-I-X.com. Have a great week. And remember, if you're in San Antonio on Friday, October 14th, come on out and see Skyrocket at Sam's Burger Joint. All right, enjoy my conversation with Samuel Chown. Shmoo, great artist, great dude. Have a great week. Let's get down.
Graduated in 2008.
Who gave you your diploma? Was it like Stevie Wonder or Billy Joel?
Steve Winwood, this Portuguese Latin artist that I don't remember her name, Rosa something. The guy who just died from Earth, Wind, and Fire.
It sounds like that's what he died from.
Yeah.
He just died of a severe case of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah. What's his name again?
Oh, yeah, Maurice White.
Maurice White.
Yeah.
And Howard Shore.
Wow. That's a good group of people.
Pretty good, yeah.
When you go do something like that, is there like a mentorship program, like in your senior year or something, where you can call Steve Winwood
and no.
ask him stuff?
No, I mean... I didn't talk to any of those people. Okay. I just shook their hand and got the thing.
What did you major in?
I graduated with a degree in professional music, which is basically like a smorgasbord of a little smattering of like all the things that Berklee had to offer. Looking back, I'd probably just do it all over again differently and major in music production and engineering.
Okay.
I kind of wish I did that instead.
Do you think that that kind of class is as enriching and educating as just a dude alone with a four-track? Because I started...
Which class specifically?
Like recording, getting a degree in that. Like, do you feel like you would need a degree in it or just spend 4 years recording?
I mean, I'm a dude that spent my whole life recording.
Yeah.
You know, I started recording myself when I was four.
Are you kidding me?
No. Just on like tape, you know,
cassette
basic
recorders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually I graduated to four track when I was like 10, maybe.
Really?
Yeah. And then I went to digital 16 track when I was 14, 15.
Fuck yeah, man.
So, I mean, I feel like I'm still improving in huge leaps and bounds every year or 2 years.
Do you produce your records?
Yeah.
Yeah. You perform everything on them. As well, or
most of the stuff.
Okay.
Just last week, I recorded for actually the first time I ever tracked a horn section.
I saw a picture of that on Facebook or something.
So I had to look back to my Berklee Arranging 2 book and reteach myself how to write horn parts. It's actually really tricky. It's not easy at all. There's a lot of rules, so yeah. I had to go back and do the whole thing, and it turned out great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, when I met up with them, I was like, hey, you guys should know I've never done this before. And I'm working with, you know, Mark Gonzalez, who's a Grammy winner, you know, from Grupo Fantasma.
Yeah.
And Derek Phelps, who plays in Black Joe Lewis, and Thomas Vanderbrook, who's like an amazing musician. He's in a bunch of different bands. So they were like, yeah, you did fine, you know? And that was like a huge relief that I didn't make any big screw-ups.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if I actually had a degree in MP&E, I'd probably be way better at... I could be a producer, but also be like a professional engineer at a studio.
Oh, right.
Really do
right,
everything
right,
myself.
Right.
That's sort of the subtle difference for me.
Yeah. You were doing that horn section because you're working on a new album?
Yeah, it should be done mixing that in November.
Okay.
Yeah.
When do you think it'll come out? Maybe January or February?
No, I don't really want to do an immediate album release. I'd rather release a song at a time and see if that generates anything. You know, and it's like if I release four or five songs and people are lukewarm on it, then maybe I just won't put out the record. You know?
Yeah.
I also feel like it's a bit of a waste of money. Like the last record I did, I did vinyl, like 300 copies of vinyl. I did 100 tapes, like cassette tapes, and I did 1,000 CDs. And I'd much rather just do 200 CDRs and send 175 of them to different publications for review. And then the 25 left, if you want to buy
it. Weird people that buy them.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that you're weird if you buy CDs.
But, right.
Yeah.
So that's probably like that's one thing I learned from the last album cycle is like there's no necessary need to do any duplication if there's no demand.
Right.
Which there isn't. So it's really hard to create demand for an all originals project.
It is very hard, man. The band that I was telling you about, Skyrocket, yeah. There's seven of us, and we were all going throughout our whole time, you know, in the 90s. We're all a lot older than you are.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all had strong careers, and we sustained we lived off of our music. And then, like, we started this band as a joke, as friends, you know, like, hey, let's see how many 70 songs we can learn and play them for free on Sunday at the Hole in the Wall. Like, all right, a bunch of dudes from bands, but then somebody offered us money to do it. And as more people were offering us, like, compared to what our original bands would get offered, they were offering us, you know, three times that amount to go do this. And it was just so hard to keep this going in the way that we had learned and come up in the 80s and in the 90s, you know. Well, and it changes so rapidly that I just talked to these guys. You know Reckless Kelly?
I don't.
I mean, this is a band that's been putting out records and, you know, since the 90s, like their 11th record, but they're like, every time we put out a record now, we have to relearn how to release a record because everything has completely changed from a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that everything's changed since you put out or even Chroma Key?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the advent of availability of any song or record or band at your fingertips. I mean, it's like an exponential thing. It keeps getting exponentially more available and more, like, I think also the whole paradigm of paying a cover to see three or four four bands that are doing just their songs. It's just not a good business model. You know, I think Cheer Ups has it right.
How did they do it? I was just there on Sunday night, but someone was just showing a documentary.
It's either free or suggested donation.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that if...
But I mean, like, at some point, there's going to have to be some kind of breaking point where people start paying for their art and entertainment again. It's the same thing with movies and stuff. I mean, people aren't going to the movies, but you can pay, you know, $12 and watch however many things you want on like Netflix or like Hulu or something like that.
Well, I guess my point is that it's a better business model to do a free show or suggest a donation and then give bands a percentage of the bar because then you'll have...
Oh, okay.
50 more people who are there to drink and like you're encouraging people. It's a bar. It's a business. So you want people to come and drink.
Right.
And if they happen to see your band, then that's a bonus point. If they like it, then maybe they'll buy merch. But to me, it's more of a win-win if you make it free or suggest a donation and give bands a higher percentage of the bar cut.
Right.
As opposed to charging a cover because that disincentivizes most people.
Right.
I don't know what the number is, but...
No, but I understand exactly what you mean. How old are you?
I'm turning 30 in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've been playing some shows out of town recently, like this month, aren't you doing shows?
Yeah.
And how's that going?
It's
you're partnering up with other bands in other cities and doing showcases like you're talking about.
Yeah, I've actually so I play in 5 bands now. That's like a new thing for me.
Wow.
So this month I've played in 5 different bands. Most of the out of town shows, they're all shmoo related, okay. But it's a crapshoot. I mean, we got a guarantee in Lafayette, Louisiana for $200. Mm-hmm. Really weak turnout, and even the people that were there were like not into it at all.
Where was it?
Is that like a? It was the grand opening of a coffee shop, okay. Shop slash bar slash late night.
Right.
You know, and then the next day, we played an early show at Siberia. They have early shows and late night shows there, which is actually a good business model, I think. But I don't know, maybe 15 people showed up, and we made $11, and that was 9.5 hours of driving that day.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I feel like I don't want to do that anymore. It's kind of a waste of time. I don't know what the answer is, but I'd rather figure something else out. Maybe play college campuses in towns where like the kids are 20 years old. They can't really go to bars and there's 300 to 500 of them and they just want something to do. And those kids are willing to pay $5 to $10 to go see you play and then buy your merch. That might be better than playing venues to 20 uninterested people, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. I'm thinking about it. It's a process.
You also own a label.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have other acts as well.
Yeah.
And you put on shows.
Right. I put on an event a month.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I try to be the kind of like a manager for these bands. Because I think, you know, I don't claim to know much, but I've had a lot of quote unquote music industry experiences. Sure. You know, like my other band Zorch, we got signed to Sargent House, which is a record label based out of LA. So, you know, like I understand what it's like to be signed to like, I guess a hot record deal, for lack of a better term, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know what it's like to not be, focused on, you know, mm-hmm. not to be at like the pet artist of a label, right. Like,
right.
Or not get the opportunities that you thought you would, or like all these expectations, being disappointed. Like I've been through all those things.
Yeah.
So, and nothing against Sargent House. They're a great label. It's just the way it is, you know, it's just some bands take off, other bands don't. And it's also about how your band fits into a network or, like Sargent House is sort of like a family where it's all these bands are similar in genre or color, you know, and they get packaged together on tours.
Right.
I don't think that Zorch fit in with any of those bands. Right. So that's going to be hard.
Yeah.
To you can't really succeed then.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't really have anything to do with your talent or even your songwriting ability.
Right.
So I try to, when I take on these bands, I try to be the sort of like the realist and keep it real with people. And I think a lot of artists also don't take the time to think through how things work other than the music making part of it.
Yeah. They don't want to. It's not fun.
It's not fun. It's really boring. Yeah. And I've kind of had to force myself to learn that stuff begrudgingly.
Yeah.
But and it's, again, it's a process, you know, like I'm learning every year that passes, I look back the year before and I'm like, man, I really didn't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
So any small amount of wisdom that I might have, I try to help impart on bands that I take on.
Right.
Because I've been through all these, you know, situations and had all these experiences.
Yeah. What did you do in Zorch? Was that your band as well?
Zorch is a collaboration between me and this guy, Zach. He runs a venue. It's like a warehouse venue space that also has 20 to 25, I guess they're like rooms where different artists can work on their own shit.
Right.
So it's like it's a venue slash art space slash, you know, having trouble finding the word right now, but I think you get the picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he,
art space.
Yeah, so he runs that and artist studios. That's what I was trying to think of. has like 20 to 25 artist studios. So that was like it is a collaborative project between us. We're taking our time working on our next record, and we have no idea when it will come out or who's going to put it out, but we're not really worried about it. I don't know. I feel like I don't really worry. The older I get, the less I worry about where things will go or like
right.
having expectations about things.
Yeah, that's normal.
You know,
all that stuff you're saying about getting older and realizing you don't know as much as you ever thought you did.
Yeah.
If all that stuff is like totally, that's what happens as you get older.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That and your jizz doesn't fly as far as it used to.
Is that true?
It's pretty true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm 47. It's not as like.
You look really good for 47.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where are you from?
I'm from Toronto.
Okay.
So I'm Canadian. It turns out.
Turns out that it does make you Canadian.
Yeah.
How was that growing up there in Canada and Toronto? Were your parents musicians? How did you know you knew music, and how did you start recording when you were four?
It's
like 8 questions, but go ahead.
Well, there's a musical gene on my dad's side. My aunt was in the original version of Hair.
No shit.
Like the play Hair.
Yeah, yeah.
She was also in the original Godspell. So
no shit.
She knew, I mean, she was friends with Martin Short.
And yeah, she was in that Toronto Godspell.
That's
where everybody comes from.
That's where everyone comes from. She was part of that.
Ah, dude, that totally makes the hair on my arm stand up. Even yeah. Don Scardino, who directs like 30 Rock, was a guy that was a director on mm-hmm. that thing, and Paul Schaefer's. But Paul Schaefer, everyone came from there. Gilda Radner.
Mean, growing up, I heard stories about all these people.
God, that is killer.
Yeah.
So she passed it along somehow?
I mean, that's pretty much the only truly musical entertainment gene that I have is her.
How did you know, like, did you just start singing? Was there a piano in your house and you could play it?
Well, I mean, both of my parents were, I don't want to say they are music lovers because I don't think they care about music really anymore, but when I was growing up.
They were.
They really were. They had a huge record collection, huge tapes, CDs, everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I was listening to, like, adult rock by the time I was one.
Right.
You know, like, I had my own copy of Joshua Tree on tape. I was listening to, like, by the time I was four, I knew all the Beatles albums and what songs were on each album and which Beatles sang which song and, like.
Yeah.
And there was no one in my class that knew what the fuck Beatles
were. Not even close.
They didn't care about Beatles. Yeah. So. I attribute that to my parents.
When you'd hear a song then on the radio, just like a free Beatles song alone, like, do you immediately start singing the next song when it ends?
You mean like if they're playing
like
an album or something?
No, like if they're just playing a song on the radio, like, you know, they'll play a Beatles song, like something from Sgt. Pepper, and then you immediately start singing the song that comes after.
Yeah. I don't really hear the Beatles on the radio much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't listen to the radio that much, but even if I did, I don't really hear Beatles on the radio that much.
Right.
I don't know.
So you get a 4-track at 10.
Yeah.
And you're writing your own tunes then?
Yeah, I mean, I remember making my first, I guess, album when I was 4 or 5. It was just me and the cheapest Casio keyboard. The one with the 100 sounds.
Not this one. Not like a double tiered.
No,
sampler.
Not double tiered.
Yeah.
looks like the Casio I have has more sounds than that. That probably has better sounds, but.
So you'd used a Casio and then that's cool as shit though.
Yeah. It's just, you know, airplane or laser beam or whatever. And I would, you know, get like and just play it and sing. And I recorded that. I remember that's the first tape I made. And then from there, that's all I did was just make tapes.
God, it's awesome. Do you still have them?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know this is kind
of... I wonder if any of that shit is just like, you go back and like, there's like one song on there, you're like, this is fucking genius. Like, you know what I mean?
I had a band with my cousins, and I'll listen to some of those tapes. So that's when I was between the ages of 10 to 12. And some of that shit is like... We could have been a Beerland band, you know, like
right.
It would, and we would have fit in just fine.
Were you playing drums then?
Drums and singing, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Have you always been drums and singing? Are you a Don Henley fan? Some people don't like him. I like him.
Neutral. I'm Don Neutral.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
He just, I mean, he just lays it down. He doesn't, he's not fancy at drums.
No, no. But he's a good singer.
Really good singer, yeah.
Okay, so then what happened? You were still living in Toronto then? Your parents are still in Toronto and everything?
Yeah. Still in Toronto. I think my mom has all the tapes that I made. There's like 200 to 300 of them. Like, I made a lot of tapes. It was really prolific. I didn't really care about quality. It was just like, let's go.
That's why you never, man, I bet you go back and listen to them. I would listen to all of them all the way through because you just never know. You might find some moment where you're like, are you kidding me? I did that when I was a kid.
It's so time consuming though. I would like to do that theoretically, but.
Right. Yeah. Who can sit around listening to your, plus you'd probably listen to one of them. It's so bad. You're like,
exactly.
Oh, God,
yeah.
I'm not going to find any genius here. Did you have bands in high school and stuff?
Yeah.
Did you play out like in Toronto? Like, did your bands, because there are like teenagers that go out and play clubs. I did when I was a kid. Like, I started out playing friends' parties in junior high. When I got in high school, I got in a band with like men that were people.
Right. I did that twice, the men thing.
Yeah, they were grown up people.
I was in a band once. I never played a show with them because I couldn't show up to our first gig because I had to go on like a class trip.
That's a shit, man.
I think I was in grade 8 and they were in like grade 12.
Yeah.
And I was the drummer. And then I was in a band when I was in grade 11 and the bass player was like 32 or something, 35 maybe. And the drummer was like 26. So those are those were interesting experiences.
It's weird when you're in those situations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So, yeah. did you want to go to Berkeley? Was that like a dream of yours where you're like, oh, look at all these guys out there?
Yeah, I mean, when I found out about the school, I was like, I'm not even going to bother applying to any schools in Canada. I'm just going to go to Berkeley. And then I got in. I was like, all right, that's it. I'm just going to do that.
Did you like Boston?
No, okay. I didn't. I think it's a beautiful city. And actually, every time I go back on tour, go through Boston, I'm always amazed at like what a beautiful city, like architecturally speaking.
Oh yeah. Historically,
I actually,
it's the closest city we really have to Europe, to being like Europe, you know, totally. What I mean? To something that's totally. Actually from the 1600s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, people think of Boston as a small city, but it's not really. I mean, I consider Cambridge, Somerville, Alston, Brighton,
me too.
It's all Boston. The whole Boston. It's like it's a city of 3 to 4 million people. It's a big city. Even though they all have their own mayors, which is totally bizarre.
That's weird.
And Massachusetts Avenue will start and restart. It's a very weird city in that way. But I didn't like it at all. Actually, my friend texted me a couple days ago and reminded me of this one time I wasn't allowed into a Soul Live show. And this is so emblematic of what Boston culture is, or was, but probably still is. I'm like 20 in college. I think I smoked one bowl, you know, and then had one beer.
Okay.
And I'm waiting in line, and the guy at the door was like, yeah, I'm not letting you in. I'm going to need you to take a walk around the block, drink some coffee, come back. He thought I was drunk or something. And I was like, what are you talking about? No, I'm not going to do that. What do you like? It was like colliding with another world, you know, like that's, you are an insane person.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't let me in. And I was like, fine, I'll just sell my ticket. And I sold it to some schlub on the street and I walked back to my dorm. It's like, fuck Soul Live then. Yeah. I mean, it's not Soul Live's fault, but I don't really like that band anymore.
Saved your money.
Yeah. It didn't really matter, but that is such a Boston thing.
Did you have bands when you went to school there? Like,
Yeah. I had a band and we played a few gigs.
She went to Berkeley, I think. Amy Mann.
Yes. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Amy Mann, Paula Cole.
Dawson's Creek theme. Cowboys gone.
That's Sean Colvin.
No. It is?
Yeah, that's Sean Colvin.
I don't even know.
Paula Cole is I don't wanna wait
for this love to be over.
Yeah. They're really similar. They're basically the same artist, so easy to confuse.
Amy Mann, though, however, is different than the rest of these people.
Totally.
So when you graduated from school, what did you do? Did you go back to Toronto or you came here?
I went right to Boston. I went right from Boston to Austin, and actually that's where I met Zach from Zorch. That's where we formed Zorch. Like, we were roommates in our first year, so we were by happenstance put together. He was the first person I met.
Wow.
And we're very different people, so I would have never had guessed that we would have been in a collaborative project together, because we were into such different things. We were very different types of people. But I think as the years went on, we just sort of, we remained friends, and we started jamming. And I think there was this one moment where we were like smoking weed and we were listening to Lightning Bolt, and they're a two piece. And we were like, man, we can do this. We can do the two piece thing, but like with synth and drums. And that's sort of how it all started.
And then awesome.
Moved to Austin together. Yeah.
Yeah. And is he still here?
Yeah, no? Still running the Museum of Human Achievement.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I went there for a show. Elizabeth McQueen.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She did a thing there, EMQ squared.
Okay.
Something like that, EMQ.
Yeah, I mean, there's like 3 to 4 events there a week, but that name is definitely familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She did a whole, they had to postpone it, I think, because it was too cold the first time.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody else I was talking to recently is doing something there. Someone that was here. I can't remember. Anyway, so what did you do when you moved here?
We knew nobody, so we would just go out to shows, meet people.
Where were you going?
The first local show I remember going to, it was Fresh Millions and Focus Group. And it's funny because I now run GTZ Records with Jeff. Jeff is Fresh Millions.
Wow, that's awesome.
And Focus Group was this great band, really interesting and experimental. They really fused electronic and I guess rock. There wasn't any guitars in the band, so I don't really like calling them rock, but like live drums with, you know, fusing that with electronics. Right. That was a really, really cool thing to see. And that guy, Andrew, runs Exploded Drawing, which happens also at the Museum of Human Achievement.
Oh, really? What is that?
Exploded Drawing is this showcase of electronic music. Uh-huh. So, like, they'll showcase 5 or 6 electronic acts, and they'll each play a 20-minute set. It's really popular. I mean, it draws like 300 people every time.
I need to get hip to that shit. Is there, like, a mailing list? Because I feel I mean, and I don't mean anything bad about this, because I've been playing there since I was 16, but fucking, I'm just always at the Continental Club.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to see any electronic. And then I'm like, I never see any hip-hop or electronic music. Well, because I don't ever go to the things.
Really?
There is. They do some. It's hard to find it.
Yeah, it's hard to find it.
But there's an underground electronica scene that I could get into.
I mean, it's literally 2016 is the year of Austin electronic music. It's blowing up. I mean, those two, Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein did the soundtrack for that show, Stranger Things.
Yeah. I tried to get those guys on the show a little too late.
And my band Zorch came up with them at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So we were playing the same kind of shows, you know.
When they were doing Survive?
They're still doing Survive. Yeah. So, that whole scene is blowing up.
Okay.
Getting national attention.
Yeah. Well, I need to get hip to it and go to the performances, because I'd like to go see that stuff. Sometimes I'm like, oh, am I always at the country bar?
Right.
Not the country bar, but you know what I mean? The rock and roll.
I never go to Continental Club. I saw Shuggie Otis there a year ago.
Well, look, I mean, I'm always going to go there. It's fucking awesome. And there are great musicians that play there. And it's like my family.
Yeah.
But I do want to see some other stuff. And if I continue to only go to that place, I'm not going to see it.
So do you know the people in Alejandro Escovedo?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you know.
I know the people inside of him.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess, you know, do you know Carla?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Manzier? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the bands I just joined is with her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she's great. She sings backup with him.
Mm-hmm.
I started singing backup with my friend Nakia one day. It was really good.
I actually did background vocals for Nakia for
you did?
3 shows. Yeah, that was one of the first things I did when I moved here.
See?
Yeah.
See, our worlds are colliding.
Yeah, I mean, it's Austin. It's small. Yeah. Small world.
Yeah. So you got here and you started playing. Where did you play, like, emos? And no, not emos. Emos was over here, right?
In which project?
In Zorch.
In Zorch, our first show was at Beauty Bar.
Oh, cool.
But before that, I would do...
Not this one, though, right?
No,
remember they had one here for a little while?
Yeah, no, not that one.
The original Jason one on...
Yep.
7th.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And before that, I was doing solo sets, just solo acoustic. Just me singing and doing acoustic guitar and looping it. And I did that at coffee shops and stuff and got really disenchanted with the acoustic scene here. It's like, fuck this, man. Was not into it at all. So I was like, I'm definitely not doing, this is not for me, not doing that. So I quit that and then did a 180 and went into the headfirst into Zorch, which was like, Zorch is pretty heavy and electronic and like, you know, the total opposite of that.
Right. It's going to be some popping sounds on this thing. There's some kind of weird buzz I'm getting. Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah, the acoustic, it seems like with what you do, it just, it's so cool. Can I ask you what the glitch element is in it?
Like how I'm making it? How I'm creating
it? Like, no, I saw it in the description and I was like, yeah, there is something like weird.
Yeah.
Am I showing my age when I'm asking what this is? This is some, what are the kids with the glitch? Yeah, explain it to me.
I mean, glitchy is just like short loops, right. You know, repeating fragments of sound quickly.
Yeah.
You know, like, bear, 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 like that kind
of
thing.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. How do you record your shit when you do it by yourself? Like, do you have it in your head and you play the drums, or do you have something already programmed and then you play drums on it and then you start building stuff? Or
it's a different process every song.
Okay.
Which I think makes the project interesting for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it just depends on what I feel inspired to do. So sometimes it's like, okay, I want to make a song with this drum beat and then overdub it with this kind of bass line and then from there. Or I have a guitar idea and I start there. Or I am sampling something and I'm editing samples and everything is based around the samples and I go from there. I mean, there's like a million different ways that I go about it.
Yeah.
Which I like. I don't like doing the same thing every time.
Then when you play live, you have a trio now, right?
Yeah.
You are a trio. You're on drums and vocals. You got a bass player and a drummer or a guitar player.
Uh-huh. And I'm also triggering the samples.
Okay.
So yeah, lots of multitasking.
How hard is that to translate what you've done recording into a live situation with these dudes?
I think they're great. They're really good musicians and they're really willing to come up with new arrangements with me because it's never going to be the same as the recording.
Right. That's what I was trying to get at. Like what do you try and keep when you do the transition from the recording to the band? Like what's the main thing? You're like, obviously the melody and the thing, but like, does it change?
Well, the samples are the same.
Okay.
That's sort of the basis, the samples, the vocals, the drumming. I mean, I'm not sure. You probably haven't seen, like, the lineup is completely different than what you were referring to earlier.
Okay.
I've gone through 4 different lineup changes. So it's been new people for the last 9 months.
Okay.
And they're great. They're a fantastic lineup. But I'm starting to notice that, like, I'm finding our set is too subtle for people for a live situation.
Hmm.
And I'm really excited to try to find new ways and new concepts where we can make it more immediate and really exciting, you know, the whole way through.
Yeah.
I think the set we've been playing is like for older people, you know, people who are like your age, 45. And they're like, yeah, man, that was really good. I'm really into Steely Dan, or I'm really into My Bloody Valentine and like this and that.
I'm into My Bloody Valentine.
You know, they like it, but people, especially kids. Like I found that when we play our set and the crowd is like 20 to 25, as soon as we start playing down to mid-tempo stuff, they're just like, they just want fast. They want fast, in your face, immediate. And I think we need to gear our set, change it. You know, I keep changing things, you know, like I try to be perceptive of what the audience, how they react and like what people want. And I always try to tailor that. So it's like, oh, okay, maybe we should do this. Maybe we should make it more drum heavy, or, you know, I keep tweaking because I'm always trying to find like, how can we be the most exciting? You know?
Yeah. That's a good thing to do. I mean, that's a good way to be a band leader, is to always be looking for the, you know, that's how the great ones do it. Always looking for the best. When you, you're playing this weekend at the, this is going to come out after it, but you're playing at the...
Pecan Street?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Pecan Street. That's a good way to say it. What day are you playing?
Saturday.
Just for me. And what time?
Saturday, 7:30.
Oh, shit.
I think.
I can't see you.
Pretty sure it's 7:30. I have to be in
Pflugerville at 8.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's no way for me to see a 7:30.
And right after that, we're hauling ass to San Antonio. We have to play at like 10:30 or 11.
Oh, really? Where are you playing there?
Imagine Bookstore.
Okay.
They got a cool little scene over there.
Do they?
Yeah, it's like a father-son operated thing. So it's like a bookstore, record store. The son's like 20 and the father is like 50, 55. And they book shows and...
That's cool as shit.
It's really... Yeah.
What, do they have like a keg or something?
No, no keg. I don't...
It's BYOB.
It's more...
I'm really concerned with having a drink at this show.
It's more of like a... what's that game? Magic the Gathering kind of vibe.
That's pretty cool.
You know, where the, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Go watch some music, go outside, get back to the game.
Yeah.
Smoke some cigars. It's more of that kind of vibe.
Wow, that's cool.
And it's like very mixed age.
That's very cool.
You know, it's like it's really endearing and special to see a father son, like they all have the same friends.
Yeah.
You know, their lives are intertwined together.
Yeah.
I mean, you never see that.
Yeah. Why is the name of your band Shmoo?
That's my Hebrew name.
Oh.
So it's my name.
You're a Jewish guy.
I'm a Jewish guy, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I recently discovered that I'm 1/16th Catholic. I thought I was a purebred, but through going back... I don't think there's
purebred of anything anymore, really.
Yeah, I mean, but
there might be.
Most Jews are purebred. That's kind of the deal. It's like, it's a very purebred race, which is why Jews, they all look the same. There's only like 20 Jews. And then you just like...
You're right.
Combine the different faces and then you get... You know, permutations of that, but there's only like so many ways you can look Jewish, you know?
There's really only one way to act Jewish, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm from Miami. Like, I went to Miami Beach Senior High School, and so there's a lot of. I'm Cuban,
mm-hmm.
and it was like Cubans, Jews, and some black people, and then this one dude that was a white guy.
Really?
Well, there was like three white guys. Right. Straight up white
just
guys.
Just straight, normal white. Yeah, I did an after-school program as a music teacher on West Anderson Lane, like in 2008.
Yeah.
And it was mostly black and Hispanic. There was only literally three just white kids in the whole program of like 300 or something.
Well, that's why they need, that's why they need to be saved as a race.
The whites?
How are you? Are you practicing Jewish?
No,
no,
not at all.
No.
I mean, I like the whole, you know, kosher. Like we're gonna cut our meat a certain way and make sure it's like gutted out properly. Mm-hmm. Like I'm into that, but I don't keep kosher. I mean, I eat bacon. Right. I eat cheeseburgers.
Yeah,
with bacon.
That's all right.
You know,
yeah.
Like I think the concept of mixing milk and dairy, meat and milk. It's a little archaic. I mean, I get it that, like, apparently Jewish people lack the enzyme to process and digest lactose.
Oh, really?
So that might have something to do with it. I think black people, too, they lack the enzyme. But I think it comes from not having, you know, you didn't have a refrigerator.
Right.
So it's like, don't mix these.
Do this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But now we have modern technology. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, most of it's just silly.
In just religion in general, there's a lot of stuff that goes back to a time that just, it doesn't really apply right now.
Right. Right.
And not in a bad way. I mean, people can still be nice to each other.
Yeah.
Not kill each other.
That's the good side of religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what does October look like for you? Are you going to be doing some schmooze shows in October?
September is kind of my, my show month. October, I'm finishing a Shmoo tour. I'm coming back from Chicago, October 2nd, and then I'm playing drums for Dial Tones with, that's the band with Carla.
Okay.
And do you know Lauren Gergiolo?
Yeah, Gergiolo. Yeah.
Gergiolo, right.
Yeah. She plays with Elizabeth McQueen. She played at that place at the Museum
of Right, so it's her band. Dial Tones is her band.
Right.
So we're playing at Museum of Human Achievement on October 4th.
Yeah, okay.
Which I think is a Tuesday. And then after that, I'm going to Berlin and I'm going to see The Cure.
Oh, that's fucking killer.
So that's sort of, I'm turning 30. That's like my 30th birthday present.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. Excited about that.
It's almost like you're turning 50 with going to see The Cure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But well, I'm going with my mom, who's 60. You
is she into The Cure?
Yeah. We got backstage passes.
You get to meet him?
Maybe.
Okay. So I was label mates with them when Blood Flowers came out.
Uh-huh.
And
which label was that?
Elektra.
So you were on Elektra?
I was on a subsidiary of Elektra owned by Lars Ulrich from Metallica. Which is wow. Surreal.
What's the subsidiary called?
It was called The Music Company. It was actually called GAC Incorporated, but I think the people at Elektra were like, please don't, we can't have a label called Cocaine.
Right.
Metallica guy.
So is Music Company spelled with a C?
The Music Company, TMC, yeah.
And it was Lars's subsubsidiary.
It did not last long.
Do you ever meet Lars?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I stayed at his house. He made me with middle-of-the-night sandwiches.
Nice.
Yeah. Seriously. Dude, are you fucking hungry, man? I've got stuff to make sandwiches up here.
That's a good Lars.
Come up here, I'm going to make you some sandwiches. Johnny, you're going to fucking love them. You're so skinny. Like, I actually know that side of him where he's like, you need to eat something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Man.
Yeah, anyway, so I can't remember where I was going with that.
Well, what band was that? I'm curious.
It was called Gaudi. It was that band right there behind you on the poster. The reason why I have my own poster up here is because there was a Tower Records, and I guess when we were there, we signed a bunch of shit, and then some lady bought it when Tower closed and got it framed and gave it back to me.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was nice. I love those shoes. I had to rent them. They were $700. Anyway.
Nice.
So I can't remember what I was getting at. I was saying something. I guess I could rewind the thing, but that would be weird. Anyway, I can't remember what I was getting at with the labels.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to me that, so you've sort of been through it all too. I mean, you know the deal.
Yeah,
You know what it's like to, I'm sure, to have things promised to you and then those things don't happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the whole thing.
Yeah. And then also just like kind of like, I don't know if yours involved. My thing that made me upset, and we actually left the label.
Yeah.
Because they got to a point where they wanted, like we were going to have to spend $300,000. Like contractually, you get a certain budget for your first record. And then that doubles for the second record.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's actually exactly the same thing with me.
Right.
There's my deal.
Like 150 to make the first one. And then it was going to have to be 300. And we were like, dude, this is crazy. Because like, whoa, I mean.
150K?
Yeah.
Holy just shit. Like, gee,
we don't need $300,000 to make a record. We were like, give us $30,000.
That's still.
And we'll just build our own studio.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And we had already started doing it.
Yeah.
And we ended up leaving that label and then doing a record like that we started in our own studio and kind of finishing with the next label that we did. But anyway, yeah.
Man, it's times have changed.
Yeah.
Like now it's like, here's $5,000. Here's $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. That, I mean, we got signed in 98.
Right.
So it was right at the end of, you know.
What were some, I know this is supposed to be about me, but I'm curious.
No, it's all about me.
Yeah. No. what bands did you guys tour with or open for?
There was a band called Unified Theory that was, that's who we toured with. They tried to get us on tour with other people.
Yeah.
Some people wouldn't take us. Some people wanted us to pay, like the tour with Stone Temple Pilots was us paying $10,000 a show.
What?
To play first on the bill. And our set would start when the doors opened, so people wouldn't even be in the place.
That's ridiculous.
When we started playing.
I mean,
like, they would be trickling in by the third or maybe fourth song.
Bands still do that. They'll still pay.
Fuck yeah, they do that. I mean, but that model didn't work for us. We realized that we were caught up. We were like a band that was a more indie band with this kind of like Metallica level thing. And then the worst part about it is our record came out. You remember the Napster thing?
Yeah.
Our record literally, like, Lars delivered the names to Napster. It was a big dramatic thing. It was like live on CNN and all this shit. Like, he delivered the names of the people that he was going to sue, the Napster users.
Yeah.
That was on a Friday. And the next Tuesday, our record came out. And he had put out one record. I got to stop talking about this because it's too long.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had put out one record by a band, but he didn't associate himself with them, and they didn't do well. So when our record was about to come out, me and him were doing like interviews together, and stuff. So we were so associated with him that that did not help us either. It was a bunch of stuff, you know. Yeah. It takes a lot. The stars all have to align for you to take one step. And then when the stars are fucking massive, you're just like, what? You know?
Yeah.
So we ended up touring with a band called Unified Theory that was like two dudes from Blind Melon, Dave Cruzan, who was the original drummer of Pearl Jam on the 10 record, and right. then this kid named Chris Shin, who's a great singer. Long story.
Yeah.
Our drummer went to Berkeley.
Cool.
Yeah, Bill Leffler. Billy Joel gave him his degree.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, the conversation comes full circle.
Right.
But you did have Steve Winwood, and that's... Think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had the best vibe.
Oh, yeah, he seems like he'd be a nice guy.
Really, he just seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah. That guy, man, that guy... I mean, I don't know what you know about him, but, like, that guy was, like, the lead singer of, like, a band selling fucking shitloads of records when he was, like, 16.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's the Spencer Davis Group.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway... is there anything I'm missing, Sam? It's been great talking to you. I like you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's up to you. What do you feel like there's anything missing?
Not that I know of. We should talk again when your record's going to come out.
Okay.
Because we were supposed to do this for the Pecan Street.
Right.
But our timing screwed up and my release thing's already the things this weekend and I got to release another one for it. But I wanted to talk to you anyway because I liked your music a lot. I still do.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I do. I really like your music. You're great. And do you still have any vinyl left?
Yeah.
Okay.
I still have vinyl CDs and tapes.
Yeah. I need to get a vinyl copy.
Sure.
Yeah, Thank you for doing the show.
Yeah. My pleasure. And, thanks for having
and
me.
And people can find you at shmusix. Shmusix.com.
I mean, those are all of our handles. So
all your handles.
Yeah. Shmusix.com or / Shmusix. You'll find every Instagram, SoundCloud, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You are everywhere. Thanks for doing the show, man.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for looking forward to seeing you live. Yeah. Shmoo. Sam Chown. Great talking to that guy, man. Get out there, pick up their latest release. You can find it on the iTunes, on the Spotify, and all the places where you get the music. Do It Up, their last album, Chroma Key, before that, and Discipline, their early stuff. Don't forget that he also has a record label that we didn't talk about very much, GTZ Records. You can go to gtzrecords.com to find out about bands like Gloves International, Stiletto Feels, UVH, Slugbug, and of course more about Shmoo. Go to Shmusix, shmusix.com. For all your Shmoo needs, I want to thank Sam for coming by. He was a great guy. Great talking to him. Canadian dudes, nice guys, right? When you're out there checking out Shmoo, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Or if you just want to stream podcasts, you can go to Stitcher. Over 30,000 shows available for you there. The best in entertainment, music, sports, politics, news, all you want. It's all available there. And don't forget, if you like a show, like if you're a fan of Shmoo and you're just coming to the show, or if you like this show and you like this particular episode, share it on your Facebook, share it on your Twitter. You can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Tag us in it. Tag me on Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. I'm also on Instagram as at Johnny Gowdy. Get out there. Get involved. Help us out. It helps spread the word about the show. That's how people find out about it. Word of mouth. Word of social media. All right? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you to Sam for coming by. Get out there and check out some more Shmoo. Here's some more music from them. Have a great day. Let's get down.